Better work presentations are possible. They're called Canva presentations. You can supercharge your work decks with Canva presentations. Sounds like I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Just start with a prompt and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds, or with a stunning template and add images, graphics, charts, and data visualizations from their massive media library. You save time and you wow your audience. Mm-hmm. I have never made one of these presentations and I never will, but there's a reason why Canva is used by 90% of the Fortune 500 companies. 90%!
That's a lot of percent.
Yeah, let's get it to 100%, guys. Come on. Nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations by heading to canva.com. Designed for work. There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Hear me?
I did. I heard you.
And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need. You just say that and they show up. They come jumping out of a shrub.
Oh, cool.
No matter where you are in life, when you need the coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, what's up? My name is John Leguizamo. And I feel, however you feel about being, I feel great about being.
Well, wait a minute. What is that? That's the least convincing. What?
Hi, what's up? My name is John Leguizamo and I feel great about being.
No.
Fall is here. Back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, the podcast that always delivers. I'm sorry. I don't know. I tried to go in with that big hard sell up front.
Yeah.
And I think I overdid it.
What does it deliver?
I don't know. I mean, it's just, I guess just, it always delivers people chatting in an informal setting. Do you know what I mean?
It does do that.
Yeah. It's not like a motor oil that always delivers peak performance at maximum RPMs. It's not that. We deliver comfortable chat in a confined period of time that will fit your commute nicely.
We promise to deliver some kind of noise.
There'll be some noise, some of which you may enjoy. If not, I think it's free. And we deliver.
The bar is so low.
Yep. That's all my right. Motto in show business. Set that bar real low. And then fail to clear it.
Come on.
And also fail to say fail. I just said fair to clear it. It's been a long day. I had a long
day.
I had a really long day. I probably should, tell people who are listening at home, I'm an incredible athlete and I competed in seven Ironman tournaments today. We had a few pitches earlier with the TV show.
With the show.
Yeah. But I thought maybe when you said you've had a hard day, it was a chance for me to lie and let people think that I am an incredible athlete.
No.
Not true.
Not true.
Gourley, how are you?
Well, I've got something that might cheer you up.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say 40% chance that's true.
Okay.
And that's being generous.
It's cause for celebration because Conan, Sona, happy 100th podcast episode.
What? You're kidding.
No.
Oh, what?
We've done 100 podcasts.
Yes.
Congratulations, pal.
Don't touch me. It's COVID.
I'm sorry.
Jesus, what are you doing? You can't touch people.
God, I'm so glad I'm not with you two.
I know.
That's a milestone. Remember when we started out? I think it was Will Ferrell was the first one.
Yeah,
yes.
And right. I remember then people saying, this isn't going to last. I think Will Ferrell said it immediately.
Yeah.
He said, this isn't going anywhere.
It defied a lot of odds.
Yeah, he walked out.
Yeah, he stormed out. I've never seen him that mad. No, that's incredible. I can't believe it's been 100 episodes.
I know.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I think we've had, I'm going to say, I think our batting average is not bad. I think we've had a lot of really fun encounters.
All of them have been fun encounters.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yes, yeah. I think every episode has been really fun.
Right.
I think it's been really fun to do this with you, to do it with Matt. I think the three of us have a good time.
Why are you saying it like you're under duress?
No, I'm not being actually sincere.
I am being sincere, too.
I am.
I really do. I think we have a very nice chemistry. And I really, I think, have laughed incredibly hard. And especially during COVID,
I'm thrilled to get to come in and do this because it's like it's just a nice escape
yes.
for me. I mean, I hope it is for the listeners, but for me, it's a nice escape to have some of these conversations. It's a balm, B-A-L-M, balm. A soothing aloe vera for my soul.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good. You spelled it.
Troubled times. Well, sometimes you say balm and people don't quite hear it. But anyway, that's great. 100 episodes. You must have bought. Did you buy us? Who would buy us something? Do we get each other something?
Shouldn't we get a cake or what? What do you do for 100th podcast episode? Is that diamonds?
I don't know.
Matt, you're the podcaster here. What happens?
Yeah. I feel like Adam Sachs, the sort of guru behind the podcast, should dig into his own pocket and get each of us a
Bentley.
Yes.
Oh, God.
A Bentley. And mine should have a license plate Pod 1. Yours should have a license plate Pod 2. And Sona's, just to confuse people, should have one that says Pod 4. And there's no 3. But yeah, Adam Sachs, who has done very well with his other ventures. He was the one who gave Elon Musk the money to start up his company.
Mm.
He's owns a big piece of SpaceX.
Yep.
He got in big to online pornography when it was just starting as an actor and then as a producer. probably stuff you can look up about him online. But no, he's done a brilliant job. And I'm sure, I don't think Bentleys are coming our way.
I like my Kia. I don't think, if someone gave me a Bentley, I'd probably still drive my Kia.
Oh,
did I bum everyone out? Did I ruin it?
No, you're keeping it real.
Saying. You have your Kia is very nice, especially considering the car you had before the Kia.
Okay, moving on.
Absolutely awful. She had a car, and when you would get in it and she would turn on the air conditioning, it smelled like bad cheese. Is that true or false?
It's true. And we did a segment on it on the show, and you broke it, and then you broke like some things on it, and you never fixed it afterwards.
That was on the TV show.
Yes.
We never talk about the TV show on the podcast.
Oh, we talk about it all the time, don't we?
The podcast is the mistress.
Yeah, what's this TV show?
The TV show is the wife.
Oh.
So the TV show is the wife.
Oh.
I've been with the wife a long time, and I'm doing the best I can to keep it together. The podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, is, well, let's just say...
It's the Gumar.
It's the Gumar. It's this incredible, hot relationship with this Sicilian woman, much younger than me.
Spicy.
Spicy. And she has a fiery temper.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And she's always saying, oh, you said you're going to get rid of the wife.
That is kind of what this is.
Yeah. And I say, I'll get rid of the wife. I'll get rid of the wife. I'm just doing it a little longer till the kids are a little older. The kids meaning, you know, Andy Richter and the people that work on the show.
Oh, right.
But the winner! Don't get mad. Let's just have incredible sex right now.
Oh.
But, you know, and then I'll find...
Come on.
What?
Wait. How do I...
No. There's no analogy there.
Oh.
I mean, okay. I just say that this is my true passion. This is my spicy Italian illicit affair.
Yeah.
This podcast.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And hey, something to spice this all up. Because it's 100 episodes, we're doing something kind of special. Do you want to talk about that?
No, I do not. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye.
I do. I do want to mention this because this is the kind of thing you can only do with your mistress. I couldn't do this on my TV show. Look at the way I talk about them. There's my TV show. And then there's my podcast. No, this is exciting because I'm here to tell you that we are going to be next week announcing the golden ticket.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, tell us all about it.
Very good, Matt. I see why you've made it so far in this game. This is a special moment because we are announcing the golden ticket. That's right. Let me explain the golden ticket. A few lucky fans are going to get the chance to virtually meet me, Sona, and Gourley. Few fans will be lucky to get the chance to virtually meet me, Sona, and Gourley, and possibly be featured on this podcast.
Ooh.
So here's what you do. You listen to next week's show, to the Kevin Hart episode, and it's a good one. Let me tell you something. And you will find out on that episode if you've won a golden ticket. Make sure to also watch the show, the TV show, and follow Team Coco on Instagram for other chances to win. More details and rules at teamcoco.com/golden ticket. We want to thank our friends at State Farm for helping make this all happen. They grease the wheels, if you know what I mean. Thank you, State Farm. And yeah, this golden ticket thing could be good. And I like meeting people.
Yeah.
How does it feel to be the Willy Wonka of podcasting?
The creep who has a chocolate factory and forced laborers.
Yeah.
Literally. Do you realize how sick, how nauseated you'd be by the sight of a chocolate stream if that was your
yeah.
day in, day out existence? That's the thing I always think about when I see the original, not talking about Johnny Depp, the original Willy Wonka, is that, yeah, it's fun to pop in, but if day in, day out, your job is to stir a giant yeah. caramel vat, yeah. you'd start to be sickened by it.
I guess.
Also, there's so many health and safety problems at Willy Wonka's factory.
Yeah.
Oh,
OSHA,
yeah.
OSHA would have shut that thing down a long time ago. On that tour alone, 6 kids are killed. There's no protective rail around the river of chocolate.
Augustus went there and just started putting his disgusting fingers in there and drinking out of the chocolate stream.
Yeah. No, it's clear that OSHA inspectors come by, government inspectors come by to check it out, and Willy Wonka has them murdered.
Yeah. What letter grade do you think it gets?
Oh, no, it doesn't ever get a lower grade. Every time they send someone from the government over there to check it out, they don't come back. And then someone somewhere in Wonkaville is biting into their chocolate bar, and they bite into an index finger. And they're like, what the hell?
They're in the candy?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's what a gobstopper is.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's a testicle.
What the hell?
A gobstopper is, yes, an OSHA inspector's testicle that's been ossified, calcified, and then caramelized. When you're sucking on that gobstopper, it's a dead OSHA worker's testicle. Murderer! You're a murderer, Wonka! Anyway, I hope that doesn't ruin the original movie for anybody. And probably explains why they won't let me do the intro on that movie mm-hmm. whenever it airs on television. All right, we shouldn't screw around anymore. We've just probably created a major lawsuit yeah. with a very powerful film company. My guest today, very talented actor, comedian, writer, and director who has appeared in such films as Moulin Rouge, like the way I say that.
Yeah.
Romeo and Juliet.
Okay.
Okay, that was just not in Ice Age. Okay, not important.
Unnecessary.
His one-man show, Latin History for Morons, is now available to stream on Netflix, and his film, Critical Thinking, which he starred in and directed, is available on video on demand. I'm very excited. This gentleman is joining us today. John Leguizamo, welcome. You know what? Let's face it. You weren't that enthusiastic about being my friend. It took you a couple of tries.
I was.
Listen, please, please. Johnny Legs. That's what we always call you.
I remember that.
Is that back in 93, my producer, Jeff Ross. On the show, he had a connection with you and he was like, I'm going to call Johnny Legs, see if he'll come in and do a test interview, And do you remember that cartoon about the aardvark, the ant and the aardvark?
Of course.
The aardvark was
Jackie Mason. He talked like this.
So I realized a long time ago that Jeff Ross was the aardvark in the ant and the aardvark. Because he's always talking to me like, hey, so what do you want to get a bite to eat? Want to get some soup? Let's get some soup. Hey, anyway.
That is Jeff.
Yeah, I called Johnny Legs and he's going to do us a favor. He's going to come in and he's going to do the guest interview. And so you were very kind. You were very nice to me back in the day. You've always been a gentleman, a scholar, and I've always enjoyed
being on the show. I was on your show like 9 times, bro.
No. 9 times. Are you kidding? You have any idea how many times you were on our show? I could look it up, but it would be more like in the 80s. You were probably like 87 times.
I was your co-host.
You were on more than Andy Richter, I think. And there's a period of time where you're on the show more than I am. We've known each other so long, but this is a chance for us really to talk, because one of the things I love about doing the podcast is there are all these guys like you that I talk to, and you come out and you score and you're really funny, and then it's time for the next guest and maybe you got to run, and we don't get to really get down into it. And that's what this
never,
podcast
never.
Is all about. I want to know the horrible things you've done in your life.
The things oh, yeah, you, this is the time for me to open up to you.
Yes, yeah, and then you're going to regret
shit that I don't tell my therapist.
Yeah, this is the stuff.
Yeah,
I want
not,
stuff
that's you, not going to happen. Are you out of your mind? Yeah, share everything you suffered or the dark side of yourself in a public forum.
Yeah.
That sounds really fun.
The dreams you've had where you were in the arms of Shaquille O'Neal and you feel things you've never felt before. I mean, we've all had those dreams.
I felt whole. I felt safe.
First of all, let's start with the basics, which is I'm curious how all my friends are throughout this insane period that we're going through. I don't know what we're going to call this pandemic after it's over, but you and I have something in
common. Post-pandemic.
Yeah, which is we both, you really love being in front of a crowd. I have to say, I am very animated by being in front of a crowd. It gives me something, and that's just not happening right now. I mean, you more than almost anyone I know, you're constantly coming up with one-man shows, and I know it's just because you're addicted to an audience. You are addicted.
I mean, I love it. It definitely feeds me. I mean, it's not the only reason I do one-man shows. I'm doing it because I have things that I got to get out of my system and things I have to say and feel and things I have to accomplish in America before I pass this life.
So what's going on? What's going on?
You get to a certain age and, you know, you start thinking about your mortality and your legacy. And
no, you're too young for that. That's for like when you were 80.
The sooner you start thinking about it, the more you do.
Oh.
You know what I mean? The more you accomplish because you're like, okay, I got a certain amount of time to accomplish all the things I want to get done. And I got a lot that I want to get done. So, yeah, I mean, I love an audience, man. I do. But, you know, I've been doing a lot of Zooming. I mean, I'm doing like performances and there's like 30 people on it. So I don't feel like I'm alone. I'm always on Zoom. And I've gotten used to it. I feel like I am hanging out. I do Zooms with friends, you know, like with Ethan Hawke. We're doing a play together with Matthew Broderick. We did a charity event. You know, I've been doing tons of stuff.
Right. I don't know if the Zoom doesn't do it for me. I don't get that same feeling off of Zoom. What I do is I drive around with the window down, you know, so I'm distanced and I'm moving through the air and I shout what I think is funny stuff at random people as I pass them. And they're not sure.
Does that have the same effect?
I get a little bit of, first of all, they don't know who I am because my hair is so long now. Like, I look like a very nice middle-aged woman.
Oh, I was going to say like a surfer bro.
Oh, a surfer
bro. He does. Like, you're like one of the beach boys.
Yeah, I'm the beach boy that never went outside because he was afraid of getting skin cancer.
Yeah, right.
All my,
the one that was neurotic, yeah. The OCD one.
All my beach boy songs that I contributed to the group are about, you've got to cover up, at least SPF 50, beautiful harmonies.
Bring a tent, bring an umbrella.
But beautiful harmonies about it. You really should wait till the sun is like at around 5:30, fewer rays get through the ozone layer. Beautiful songs that people love, by the way.
But vulnerable. They're so vulnerable.
They're so vulnerable and really specific about skin diseases.
Yes, about skin cancer.
Yeah. No, I mean, you don't worry. I mean, you've got that beautiful Latin skin, you know, that I think is gorgeous. I really do. I think it's like, we have talked about this.
I like talking to you. This is fun.
No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I like my melanin.
Yeah, you have.
I wish I had more melanin, but I got the melanin that I got.
You got the melanin. I got no melanin. Mm-hmm. I got absolutely none. And then little splotches. I've got little freckles, and I mean everywhere.
Well, I got freckles too. I'm a freckled fella as well.
Where are your freckles? I don't think I've seen your freckles.
It's hard to, they're there. They're all like, you know, you connect the dots. They're just, they're browner on a brown skin, so. Look.
Yeah, on you it looks really good. I can see now. You don't have to get any closer than that. That's fine.
I'm sorry. I like intimacy.
That's really good. I'm worried about.
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of intimacy.
I'm not afraid of intimacy. I'm just worried about that.
You seem to be.
I see a blocked pore, and I'm worried about it. I'm worried that's going to blow up on you. You know, I didn't realize, and I've known you for all these years, that you were born in Bogota, Colombia.
I'm an immigrant. Yeah, I came here when I was 3 years old. And we came to Jackson Heights, Queens. My family, we lived all in one room together and slept in one bed together. And there was like no living room, no dining room, no bedrooms. And my parents worked their asses off. And then we moved into an upgrade the next year where we didn't have a Murphy bed anymore. Well, no, we still had a Murphy bed, but my parents had their own private room so they could do their thing.
The Murphy, well, I hope, yes. Parents have got to do their thing. except my parents, who I don't think ever did their thing. But anyway.
Oh, they must have done it because you're here.
Well, we don't know where I came from. If anyone was created in a lab, it was me. But, you know, Murphy
Bed. You're the great human experiment.
That's the great, the Murphy Bed's the great thing that used to be in old comedies. It's the fold-out bed. It folds out the wall. And it was in the old comedies where, you know, guys would jump on it and then the Murphy Bed would flip up in the wall.
And then, slam them in there. Yeah, the feet would be, it would be gone.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things. It's like the 30s and 40s, the big thing was a Murphy Bed. And you and I grew up, television was mostly them showing us stuff that was made in the 30s and 40s.
Because way back when.
Because when you and I are growing up, really coming of age in the early 70s, 1970s, I'm guessing, we're watching all the local channels that you could get in that had reception would show you old Three Stooges. They would just show that stuff 24 hours a day. And so
oh, yeah, 24 hours a day. Three Stooges, Popeye.
Yeah.
Like things from the 20s and 30s, the Our Gang.
Yes, Our Gang.
Remember that stuff?
So I grew up knowing about weight reduction. Yeah.
I'm in the mood for love. Simply because you're near me.
But it's so weird because you and I both are growing up in these families, a bunch of kids jammed together, and you'd think would be consuming all the really cool music and whatever was coming out that was really cool in 1974. I was not. I was watching all this stuff on television that had been made in the 1930s and 40s. The Bugs Bunny cartoons were made in the 1940s.
Right.
So
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Like an anvil would fall on the coyote and flatten him. And I didn't know what an anvil was. I just knew it was a heavy thing that flattened coyotes. It took me.
Right.
I'd never seen one.
We're not blacksmiths.
No,
yeah,
we had never seen an anvil, but the guys making those cartoons had seen anvils when they were kids because there were still blacksmiths.
Because it was the 1800s.
Yes.
They were born in the 1800s.
Most of the animators working for Warner Brothers were over 100 years old, and they had fought in the Civil War.
Well, if you're in the 1930s mm-hmm. and you're like, what, how old are you going to be, like, doing cartoons? Maybe
yeah, you're going to
be,
you were born in the 1800s. Century. Yeah, in the 1800s, you're exactly right. So all I'm saying is that I grew up knowing about comedy gags where a person would have a weight reduction belt that jiggled your belly. Which
right.
This machine they had in the 30s and 40s that then didn't exist anymore. And so
because it was stupid and fake.
Yes.
All it was jiggle your fat. It didn't take it off.
Yeah. Well, we've since then, thankfully, we live in a society now where there's nothing stupid and fake that's being sold to people.
Right. Everything really works now. Everything really works.
Anything you
really
see advertised.
Advertising is true. Yes. Right.
But probably you, like me, figured out, oh, comedy or being funny can probably get me out of trouble if I'm in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know how we got that. I guess Bugs Bunny was always using comedy to get out of trouble. So that was like a big cartoon life lesson, right?
Yeah.
Now, would I throw a lit match if Muggsy was in here? Oh, you might, Rabbit. You might.
Right.
And then he throws in the lit match and poof, get me out of here. Get me away from this crazy rabbit. So, yeah, no, I felt like comedy definitely did help me. I mean, it helped me not get beat up. It helped me, you know, make my dad laugh so he wouldn't be, you know, such a dictator. And he was kind of horrible at home. And comedy was the thing that kept me just feeling safe. You know, it was my defense mechanism against a hostile world at home, outside on the street, everywhere.
Comedy would make my friends laugh. It never kept me from getting bullied. The bully usually didn't get what I was, you know what I mean? They didn't get
the
reference.
That's the problem with highbrow humor.
And then I got slapped around, you know, or shoved.
For being a smartass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I remember.
Well, you making fun of me, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is a true story. I was with my brother, Luke. People were always confusing Luke and I. They thought we were twins. He was a year older, but they got us confused. And Luke is still incredibly smart. He's the really smart one. And he had no fear for some reason. And there was this market we used to go to near our house called Kirkman's Market. And there was some tough kids that hung around Kirkman's Market. And they would always, they didn't know my name, but they'd be like, hey, Luke. And they'd come running over and surround us and just shove us around and basically intimidate us. And it was scary. I was once there with Luke. Back then, kids in Boston would say, what are you, mental? Meaning, and this meant, that just was like short for, what are you, stupid? And so these kids would be like, what are you? They said something to Luke like, what are you, mental? And Luke said, I'll never forget this. He said, well, mental comes from the Latin of the mind. So yes, and thank you very much. The beating that ensued lasted 10 minutes. It's like, what? And later on, I was like, what'd you do that for? And he's like, well, you know, if they're going to use Latin words, they should know the root. And I'm like, you fucking got us. You made it worse.
Yeah, you can't use etymology as a hatch.
Latin has never stopped a fight.
Bullies don't like information.
No, bullies don't like it.
They don't want you to correct them.
Very few times in life has someone been bullying someone, and then that person has pointed out to them some fact about the universe, and they've gone, you know, I'm going to put this giant fist away. I'm going to put it back in its case.
Because I've learned so much. I've learned the meaning of life. My life has a new purpose.
Did people think you were weird, or you were able to pull it off? Because you could always do voices. I know that. You could always do voices, and you could do different
characters. Oh, yeah, I was always doing voices. You know, like I would go to parties, and everybody would go, oh, John, put on that coat and do that character. And I'd be like, yeah, here we go. What's up, baby? How you doing? You know. So I would do my voices, and people would crack up, or my dad would laugh, you know. Do me. Okay, do me. Oh, stop it. Don't stop it. You know, so I would do
now,
that.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Okay. Did your dad, because you said he had a temper, if you did an impression of your dad to your dad, did he let it slide?
When he was asking for it.
Yeah.
Not on my time. When he was feeling good and had a few drinks, that was all chill. If I was doing it when he was all other times, I would get a beaten. Because I had to say, with my dad, you couldn't say, like my dad would, John, come over here. I go over here and I go, what? Did you say what to me? You have to say, sir, don't ever say what. Yeah, because a Latin dads hear what as fuck you.
Really?
Seriously. So you have to say, sir, you can't say what. And so I would say what, and I knew I would get a smack, and I would get smacked. And then I feel beaten up, but at least I was anti-authority.
Right. I didn't know that you had to say sir to your dad.
Oh, hell yeah. I had to say sir. I couldn't say what.
Yeah. My dad made me call him the admiral. Even though he's not an admiral, that was because he was, you know, had lost his mind.
That's mad authoritarian. You needed to resist.
He would say, "You will address me as the admiral," and I'd say, "Well, you've never served. I don't think you've
you
ever,
don't know how to sail.
You don't know how to sail.
You don't know how to use a compass."
Yeah, and he had an admiral's hat that he would take out that was all banged up, and he'd put it on and go, "I am the admiral," and it didn't go.
Are
well.
You confusing him with that guy that used to be on TV that used to introduce Popeye the admiral?
No.
Are you having a mental break?
Well, yes, that's what the podcast is for. Whenever I feel like I'm just about to go, I quickly run into the podcast studio and I'm like, get me Johnny Legs. I gotta have my breakdown in front of somebody who will understand.
Are you confusing reality with television?
I usually do.
We watch a lot of television, man. It was like our babysitter. I mean, I was right. Watching TV 24/7, but it influences your comedy.
Oh, and incredibly. I learned so many comedy moves by the time I was 15 because I was watching Marx Brothers, Three Stooges. I mean, a lot of old stuff. I mean, some new stuff, but predominantly old stuff, which when you think about it, they were all doing vaudeville. So
we're learning
our comedy moves, even though it's 1974, we're learning our comedy moves as much from vaudeville as we are from George Carlin.
And what is vaudeville? Commedia dell'arte. I mean, it's all classic anyway. I mean, it's all really classic routines from the beginning of time, even from Aristophanes.
Yeah. Well, when did...
Oops, I'm going to get beat up for using
that. I know. My brother Luke is calling in right now. Did he say Aristophanes?
I did say Aristophanes.
And then he gets beat up over the phone, which has never happened before. I'm curious. I loved comedy, and it was just something I did for fun. It never in a million years occurred to me that I could do it for a living. Did you know that you could do
it? No. Hell no. I mean, that I can make a living out of it? Are you out of your mind? No way. I mean, I just loved acting and comedy, and I just took acting classes, and all of a sudden I went to NYU. I studied acting, and I got into student film, and the student film won a Spielberg Award, which is like an Oscars for a student film. Then I got an agent, and I was doing improv groups, and I had a sketch comedy group. So I did that stuff, but I never thought I would make cash. I didn't think I'd make money. I never saw anybody like myself, you know, out there. So I was like, I'm not going to make it. I was the only Latin person in my acting classes, in my acting classes at college, and, you know, in the comedy club, there was only one other Latin person to me.
When you moved to Queens, was it a Latino neighborhood or was it not?
Well, it was in transition.
Right.
It was reverse gentrification. We were moving in, and there was a thing called white flight. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have. It's like, I myself have practiced white flight. I've run away from everything in my life. Usually from my wife.
Oh, yeah.
When she's angry. But tell me about that. So you move in and it's in transition. And this is
right. So all Latin people are moving in. All kinds of Latin people. Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, Colombians, Ecuadorians. And the white people, the Germans, the Irish, the Jews, the Italians are all leaving.
Right, right.
And, you know, of course, they all beat me up before they left. And
well, that's just, like,
just to make sure.
Wait. Let's see. I turned off the gas. I locked the door.
I turned off the gas. The car's locked up. Now it's time to meet Johnny Legs. Oh, come here, little cockroach.
Where the fuck is he? Where's the fucking Johnny Legs? It says
hey, hey, you. Hey, come over here. Hey, you. Yeah, you spit. Come over here. I want to talk to you for a minute. What are you people moving in here for, eh?
Today it would be Siri reminding them. Reminder. Go beat up John Leguizamo. Oh, thank you, Siri. You're a good friend. You're a good friend to have, Siri.
Oh, he said John Leguizamo. He's coming over here. They're moving into our neighborhood. They're moving everywhere. They're lowering the property values. I can't take it.
I got to get up. I got to go produce a Conan show. And then I got to get some soup. I just can't keep happening.
I've been producing Conan all my life. I'm going to continue it to my death. I mean, it's been a long run, but I'm thankful for the job and the security.
I started producing Conan when I was 55, and now I'm 107. And why is he aging and I'm not? I don't understand it.
I'm the Methuselah of producing, but it's quite all right. I'm going to get that award.
So, you know, what's fascinating is that you've had, you know, some people would say, okay, I'm just going to go into stand-up or I'm just going to go into sketch comedy. You got yourself and you were determined to get, apparently, a very broad education in theater and all kinds of theater. It felt like you had this sort of big appetite for, I want to know improv. I want to be able to do one-man shows. I want to be able to work in sketches with other people. I want to be able to work as you have with some of the best directors in the business. You had this appetite for throw it at me. I want to learn about it. I want to take this seriously.
Yeah, I studied with the greats, you know, and I learned a lot from them, and it made me appreciate craft, you know. And so to me, craft was everything. I felt everything had a skill and you had to learn it, like improv and sketch comedy. And then when I did one man shows, it was one man show crafting, you know, I loved it. And also I'm a Latin guy. So my opportunities were also limited. So I knew I had to do everything if I was ever going to survive in this business. Just like J-Lo. J-Lo, what does she do? She has to dance. She has to sing. She has to sell cologne. She has to right. be a judge on a show. I mean, because you know you can't do it on just your, you know, your Latinness.
Right, right. Probably hard for you because you've seen it change so profoundly since you were 19, 20.
Right. And the Latino guy was this. Yo, what's up, baby? You know what? Yo, what the fuck? I'm going to kick your ass. You're either a gangbanger, a murderer, a drug dealer. Or you were cleaning somebody's house. And it was me, Luis Guzman, Benicio del Toro, Benjamin Bratt. And we go to these auditions and it'd be the four of us. Hey, what's up? How you doing, Ben? How you doing? What's up, man? Oh, you doing? We're doing this shit again. Oh, yeah, we're doing this shit again. And then it's like, yo, they called me in, man. I'm coming in. I'm coming. And, you know, you put on, we all had leather jackets, bandanas on. It was so, it was, you know, it was like step and fetch it Latin style.
Right, right. I mean, obviously, throughout your career, you just kept hammering away at, you know, changing that identity. And you look at what kids, young kids are seeing now is if you had said when you were 19 or 20, I want to play Alexander Hamilton, you know what I mean?
Right.
You can just imagine the reaction that you would get.
Lin-Manuel, I mean, can you imagine him pitching that to a network or a studio? The studio heads would be like, excuse me, wait a minute. Hamilton's going to be played by a Puerto Rican and Burr's going to be black. I got to tell you something. I know for a fact the Founding Fathers didn't speak in hip hop. It would have never got done, man. It would have never been a movie. It would have never been a network or a streaming series. It just would have never happened. But the beautiful thing about theater and why I stayed in theater was because there are no gatekeepers there. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just a matter of you raise the money. You have a great script that you hope is critic proof. And boom, you're set for life. You know, your content doesn't have to be passed on by executives or lesser executives trying to prove their worth, giving you ridiculous notes. No, you do your thing with your director and boom, you're on stage. And then the audience either comes or doesn't. And that's how you survive. And that's how you know you're relevant.
I know then the times in my life when I'm attached to a giant machine, I'm always conscious that I'm here by the grace of that machine, you know, that that they can.
But by machine, you mean like when you
like a giant
NBC?
Network, like a giant network or a studio. I know that I'm here.
And what does that make you do?
Well, it just makes you, you know, I tried throughout my career to just let my weirdness, my freak flag fly, regardless of that. But there were periods in my time.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I got to say, that's pretty amazing because for you to have allowed yourself to be such a unique individual takes a lot of chutzpah and courage and cleverness, because how do you get that past the networks? Because they all want to make everybody, you know, the same, homogenous.
Right. Well, you know, in the early days, what I learned, which was smart, was just agree. Eventually, they forget. And then when it starts to work, they forget that they told you it had to go.
Right.
Like, you know, lose the stupid haircut, change the stupid name, stop acting like an idiot. And these sketches are so weird. Stop being so weird. And what happens over time is they just, when it's starting to work, they're like, yep, I knew that would be okay. And then the thing that's important to do is don't say, I told you so.
Right.
Say, yeah, no, thank you. Thank you very much. Just keep it, anything to keep it going.
Right. Let make them think it's their idea and they came up with it, and then they love you even more because they believe that they are the ones that created you.
Yeah.
Created the success of the show.
But you have done such a spectacular job of creating your reality. You can do a one-man show, but you can also be directed by a Brian De Palma or a Spike Lee or be in like Romeo and Juliet or Moulin Rouge. You can, there's no putting you in a category. And I think that just comes out of talent and stubbornness, I'm guessing. Because it's not just one.
No, definitely. No, it's not just one. You're right. It is a lot of stubbornness because I'm not going to quit. I'm tenacious. I wanted to be with all the greats like Baz Luhrmann and Spike Lee, Ava DuVernay. And I got a chance to be in that incredible series When They See Us with Ava DuVernay about the Central Park Five.
Yes, I know. I saw.
And I would, you know, I would have paid her to be in it because
you don't want to mention that. You don't want to say that up front.
No. I'm saying it now after. Yeah. If I was really courageous, I would have said it before. But I ain't stupid and I'm also cheap.
You always want to mention that right up front. I'll do this for free.
Yeah, you do that then, after the fact.
I don't know how old your kids are, but my son is 14 and my daughter is 16. And that made that so hard for me to watch, just knowing how sensitive and beautiful and innocent a 14, 15, or 16-year-old can be. And to see them get put through that meat grinder unjustly, it was nauseating, just absolutely nauseating.
Absolutely nauseating at the justice system. I mean, some of the kids weren't even there.
Right.
That's the crazy thing. They rounded them up. I mean, it was a crazy, crazy story where Trump, you know, took out a 100,000-page ad. I don't know how he paid for it because he's always broken his taxes. But but somehow he paid for that.
This is back when he paid his taxes.
He hasn't paid his taxes in 20 years. Maybe you're right. Maybe that was right before.
This was just before when he overpaid. He overpaid his taxes. And he realized, and so he decided, for 20 years after this, I'm going to recoup the overpayments that I made. I'm pretty sure, because this is a very pro-Trump podcast. So I'm not going to.
Oh, no.
Well, that's the only reason Sona would sign on.
No,
she's a whole hardcore Trump person.
No.
Whatever. Well, it's your first MAGA hat I ever saw was on Sona. Anyway, that's her business, not mine. Sona, where else can you go surfing and skiing the same day, huh?
I don't know.
Or check out a world-class art museum and then camp at a dark sky sanctuary that night, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, where else can you hike through redwoods and then get a luxury spa treatment?
Where?
Well, you live there. California. California, Sona. No matter where
California.
You go across the state, you'll find a way to play. I'm a California resident. Sona, you are a lifelong California resident.
I'm a lifer. I love this place.
This is a beautiful state. Gorgeous. So many different, wonderful ecosystems in one state. You can hang out by a Palm Springs pool. You know, you can go whale watching. You can go hiking in Yosemite. And then talk about the great cities in California. You get all this amazing food, sushi, whatever you want. They got it in California. Hey, if you can't find it in California, man, you got a problem.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that. I made that up on my own. Anyway, I love California. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Today's episode is brought to you by Cap'n Crunch. This has meaning for me, okay?
because I grew up as a child obsessed. My brothers and I were obsessed with sugar cereals. We loved Cap'n Crunch. And then when they came out with Cap'n Crunch and Crunch Berries,
oh.
It was like Oppenheimer. I saw a white light and I knew that life had changed forever. And true story, I was just back in Boston visiting my brother Neil. And not kidding, he is 2 years older than me. We are grown-ass adults. What do? We sit down at our kitchen table in Brookline, Mass., and we both crack open a box of Cap'n Crunch with Crunch Berries.
Oh, my God.
And we had it together, multiple bowls, and I was so happy.
Oh, it's nice that you have that.
It really is. Break away from the ordinary with Cap'n Crunch and bring back the spirit of adventure to your mornings. Everyday life can be stressful, but I've got to tell you, it's just such a sense memory for me. Not just original Cap'n Crunch, which is great. Then, oops, all berries
yeah,
they came up with.
I remember that.
Usually I don't eat foods that have oops in the title. But when they came up with oops, all berries, I was there. Peanut butter. Oh my God, peanut butter crunch is fantastic. It turns the milk into this cool peanut butter milk. I love it. Join the crew for your next breakfast time crunch venture. That's a word now. Buy Cap'n Crunch's new Cinnamon Crunch now at a retailer near you and learn more at Cap'nCrunch.com. Neil, we made it! Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT, introducing ADT Self-Setup. Featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest Cam and the Nest doorbell with a battery or wired option. Your choice. Easily install the ADT self-setup security system at your convenience. You don't need heavy-duty tools. And if you do need help, ADT can provide virtual assistance along the way. Self-setup from ADT grows, moves, and adapts as your needs change. You can add more products at any time, and your system easily moves wherever life takes you. It also features Nest Cams. They can tell the difference between a person, an animal, a vehicle, or with the Nest doorbell, even a package. These things are getting so smart. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. You can view video of an alarm event and verify or cancel an alarm with just one quick tap. Now, everyone can get trusted security from ADT installed your way with no long-term contracts. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, well, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are all trademarks of Google, LLC. I want to ask you, you talked about growing up in the same room when your family first moved to Queens. I believe that there's something magical that happens when you have to sleep with brothers in the room. Like that, in my situation, I grew up in a room where
with Luke,
with my two brothers. So there were three of us.
Oh, three of you.
Neil and Luke each had a twin bed, and I had a cot that was on the against the wall.
Oh, you're a big guy for a cot.
No, I wasn't a big guy then. This was me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just a torso then. My legs hadn't shown up. And I remember just being in that room. And that would be something that some people would complain about now. Like, oh, I had to live in a room with, there were three of us to a room. But I was thinking at the time, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. I loved it. I loved being jammed in with other people.
Right. I mean, my brother and I would talk. I mean, we always had a room. We always shared a room together, my brother and I. And we talk all night or goof all night or fight all night. You know, it was a great time, but we shared so much. I mean, it makes you a better communicator. You know what I mean?
Right.
Makes you a better storyteller. All those nights staying up with until your mom comes in. I told you to go to sleep. I had to go to work and you talk all night and talk.
I like your mom. I like that.
Oh, I love her too. But she was always trying to get us to go to bed. It was like impossible. Not my brother and I.
My mother was always, her thing was drama. You know, there's the lady in the Marx Brothers movies that goes, well, Mr. Groucho.
Margaret Dumont.
My mother always had a whiff of that about her, which was always kind of like,
oh, you're incorrigible.
Yeah. Well, she didn't have an accent.
Quite finally, it's a pleasure.
She grew up in Worcester, Mass, but she, and very well educated, but she was just like, well, I'd like to think that my children wouldn't use a word like that, but I suppose, and the word that we had used was like knucklehead, you know, like something that should be allowed.
Fathead or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was hoping that my children wouldn't stoop so low. It was always more that. Still, that's still the voice I hear in my head.
I'm curious, you've done so many different one-man shows, and it feels like there's obviously a drive behind each one. Latin History for Morons. I love the title. What were you going for with Latin History for Morons? What were you trying to say?
Well, I think I was trying to even the playing field for Latin people. I really felt like it was a call to action for me. I had to make right what America, the psychosocial erasure that we Latin people have experienced in this country for 500 years. I was like, I have to dig for the history and present it in a way that's really palatable to everybody.
Right.
So that everybody understands, even Latin people, that we're not less than, we're not second class citizens. We didn't just get here. We've been here for 500 years. And before that, we were great empires, Maya, Inca, Aztec, Comanche, and Apache. And I had to get that information out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the beautiful thing is that's what happened. I weaponized this information. And all of a sudden, Latin kids are coming up to me who are 19 and 20. Goes, I was so angry. I didn't know what to do with it. But now at your show, I know I can use information and books on my weapons. And I was like, yes, yes.
That's got to be a good feeling.
Oh, my God. It's a great feeling, man. It's a great feeling. And then the mayor of California, of L.A. Garcetti came. And then a few months later, he started a whole commission about how to include Latin history and more ethnic studies in the curriculum. So all these little victories were so incredible for me. And I was so excited, you know, because the things that I learned were shocking to me, that I hadn't had that in the history textbook, that I hadn't seen it in a Spielberg movie, Band of Brothers. Where's the Brown brother? You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, what happened? I mean, we're the only ethnic group that's fought in every single war America's ever had. We're the most decorated minority in every one of those wars. And I'm talking about the American Revolution, where 10,000 unknown Latino patriots fought out of a total of 80,000 troops. That's 1 in 8, Conan.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And then 20,000 was in the Civil War, 120,000 was in World War I. 500,000 Latin people fought in World War II with crazy heroes. Like this guy, Gil Bosques, Mexican guy in France. He rented two churches and hid 40,000 Jews from the Nazis and then gave them asylum in Mexico. Where's that in a Hollywood movie?
That's incredible.
Where's our Latin Oscar Schindler movie? You know what I mean?
I think this is your assignment. This is, you know, if they say Conan O'Brien tells this story, people are going to be pretty. I think they're going to be pissed off. You know, they're going to be.
If you cast yourself as Gil Bosques, yeah. But if you're producing it, I wouldn't be so mad at you.
No, but I think if I produce it, I should also play Gil Bosques. I think.
Hey, I put the risk. I get to be the lead.
Yeah, that's, you know, how it goes. I think I can play Latino. And what are you saying no for, Sona?
No, get behind me on this. Hard no. Absolutely.
That's a hard one.
There's not enough.
Even with the great
the
CGI
world.
They have now, yeah. Exactly. Even with the great CGI, it's gonna be tough. I know they made blue people in Avatar. But.
That's right. When I saw Avatar, I stood up in the theater and said, I can be Latino. I was escorted from the theater and then beaten by the same people that beat
me. Yes, I can.
No, I just think that you're activated by these stories. But yeah, I think that's the great thing, too, is you have the power to get out there and say, we got to get this made. We got to get, you know, and we have to, this,
oh,
this
yeah,
story
yeah,
has
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Be told.
I mean, because of Black Lives Matter, I mean, there's a real reckoning in America right now, which is really beautiful. I think even with the dark times that we're living under, this, the possible death of our democracy, even with, you know, Latin immigrants being put in cages and families being separated daily, a thousand a day. And even with COVID and the pandemic and the destruction of our economy in so many ways, I mean, there's still beautiful things happening, man. I mean,
I just wish you hadn't listed all those things. You would have cheered me up more if you hadn't listed all of them.
Because they're there and they exist in our
subconscious. I know.
You know, we're all freaking out.
I started wetting myself when you were at the end of that list. It is. But you know what? I have the same feeling that you do, which is there is some real goodness is going to come out of this. And that can sound hackneyed or trite.
No, but it's true. Conan, that's what I'm telling you. Yeah. Change is a coming. It's a foot. I mean, Scholastic Books reached out to me and a whole bunch of Latin people because Latin kids are the least represented in children's picture books, even though we're 30% of the nation's public school kids. But they reached out to me, my friend Crash, Crazy Legs, and all these Latin artists to create children's storybooks. Paramount just made an incredible deal with Eva Longoria, Idris Elba, Angela Bassett, Selma Hayek, and myself to create people of color's content. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Oscars, the new rules in the Oscars, I'm not sure when they become implemented in 2022 or something like that anyway, but you have to have people of color in your cast and in your crew if you want to submit to the Oscars. I mean, these are the changes that I could only have dreamt of my whole life. I never thought they would come true. I mean, to me, that's huge.
Oh, of course. I mean, I love that, you know, you earlier in the interview, you were sort of portraying yourself as this old man whose time, well, I don't have much time left, but I think you're in your prime. I really do. I think you're, you know, you've done great work, but I feel like, first of all, you look about 35. I don't know what you're doing. You're probably having
it's a lighting.
What's that?
I eat embryos.
Well, that's great. That's great.
I shouldn't have shared that. Did I share too much?
No. I was well behind you, and then you know that's the quote we're going to pull. That's going to get all the press. John Leguizamo eats embryos, and then suddenly you're disinvited from the old Eva Longoria list.
There I go. I'm canceled. They canceled my ass. Yeah.
But at least for a really interesting reason.
For a stupid joke. Yeah.
No, but, you know, I love this. It's like I also just wanted to mention critical thinking, too, which I think is such a great project that you started and you directed, which was, you say, is a true story about these Latin and Black kids in the ghetto in Miami who become chess champions. That's their way out.
It was an incredible story, man. It was a beautiful story. True story, five Latin and Black kids in one of the toughest neighborhoods in Miami called Overtown, Liberty City back in the day. And in 1998, you know, their school was defunded. You know, trickle-down economy, you know, mm-hmm. is a lie. Nothing was getting into that neighborhood. And this teacher, Mary Martinez, the one that I play, you know, created this elective for kids like ghetto nerds, you know, kids that didn't want to fight. They didn't want to gang bang. They didn't want to play football or fight. They wanted a place to nerd out. And he created this little space and they became United States national chess champions in 1980 for 5 years in a row. I mean, it's an incredible story.
I just love also that you're shining a light on nerds are everywhere. You know, and every minority group has yep. nerds, and every socioeconomic class has nerds, yep. and that's one of the things that I think is sort of a beautiful thing. It's a weird sentiment, but there's no group in America that doesn't have its share of nerds who are doing
absolutely.
And they're the ones that I identify with. They're the ones that I've
Me too. I was a ghetto nerd. My brother was a ghetto nerd. You know, we just grew up in a tough neighborhood. My brother never left the house because, you know, it was a tough neighborhood. I went between both worlds. But my brother didn't go out. But he was like, you know, salutatorian in high school, went to Columbia University, you know, super, super, super nerd. And they exist all over. And you're right. And they're the force that powers America.
I think you went too far. They don't power America.
Oh my God, you cut out on me. Where's my lifeline?
Sorry, I just can't go, you know. We're not like the Avengers. Maybe we are. I don't know. Maybe we are. Nerds everywhere.
Come on,
unite.
You know, Bill Gates, come on.
You're right. You're right. Man, I wish I had beaten up.
Elon Musk, come on.
Can you imagine those guys getting bullied? I just think of it. I bet we could bully them now. You and I could bully them.
Oh, we could still bully them.
Yeah.
They're bullyable. We just can't get to them because they're in compounds.
Yeah, and they're surrounded by
millions of security.
Protected by solid gold robots. Listen, I don't want to keep you too long because I know you've got a lot going on. You're a very busy man, but I loved getting to talk to you. It was so nice.
Oh, it was great talking to you, Conan. I know it's great to see you, man. I feel like you're like a long-lost family member.
Do I look like a long-lost family member?
You don't look like it, but I feel the feeling.
Yes, I feel the feeling. I feel the feeling.
Yes.
I wish I looked like you, but maybe in the next lifetime. Maybe I'll get to come back.
Well, it's great. Always great to see you, man. Ever since I was your first test guinea pig.
That's right. We didn't even have a set when you came on.
No, you didn't have a set.
The set wasn't built yet. And so Andy and I were like sitting on orange crates. And I said, and I was like,
"Well, it's a black box."
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name's Conan O'Brien. I'll be replacing David Letterman. Anyway, my first guest. John Leguizamo, let's get him out here. And you were kind enough to play along. And
oh my God, I'm laughing because it was true.
Yeah. And
there was a little tremor in your voice. I'm not going to lie.
Of course. Yeah. Well, it's there now. But I had a tremor for good reason. I was in way over my head, but you were always so nice.
Oh, it was so much fun, man. You were so quick. You always been so quick. And you say the most outlandish stuff. I love always hanging out with you.
It's the medication I'm on. Well, listen, John, let's...
get me some.
I'll get you. You get me the
embryo.
Hook
up a brother. Come on.
I'll talk to you soon. But God bless and hang in there. Stay safe.
You,
and I can't wait
fist
to...
Fist bump.
I can't wait to... I'll fist bump you. Over the virtual airways. There we go. Look at that. Camera. Oh, right. There's the camera right there.
There you go.
Bam. Look at that. Look at that freckled knuckle and tell me.
Oh, those are good freckles.
Yeah. Do you want that skin? Is that the skin you want, John? You want that? Looks like someone opened a can of Spam from 1942. It's disgusting.
I love Spam.
John Leguizamo, the best. Thank you so much, sir.
A big hug. Yeah.
I bow to you. I'll see you soon, I hope. Yeah. Let's get through this thing. And when it's over, I'd love to get a meal.
Yeah. It'd be a blast.
Because we could talk about all this
Jeff Ross.
We'll just make fun of Jeff Ross the whole time.
All night long.
He's still, all these years later, he's like, "Oh, you're going to talk to John Johnny Legs today, huh?" Oh, yeah. No, I'm the reason we know who he was because I produced it. I'm like, "Jeff, I know. You've been living off John Leguizamo for 30 years. Leave him alone." I'm telling you, I knew him back in the day.
That's exactly how he sounds.
He's the aardvark from Ant and the Aardvark.
Yeah, he is.
All right, sir. I know you got to go. So run. Thank you.
Much love,
bye-bye.
Guys. Thank you, man.
I gotta say, everywhere I go, people are talking about Monopoly Go. And for good reason. It's an absolute hit!
Yeah. I love Monopoly.
People love Monopoly. And look, Monopoly's been around for a very long time. It's one of the oldest board games ever, okay?
Okay.
But lately, I walk around and I just hear like, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? What are you guys talking about? And they say, we're playing Monopoly Go. You can play it with your family, your friends. It's a straight delight. There's always something new to do. Partner events where you can build on each other's boards and crazy tournaments with team events you can recruit your friends for, or you can just compete to outdo them all on the leaderboards. Mm. And when you're not messing with your family and friends, Monopoly Go is always throwing new stuff at you. They have taken Monopoly to the next level. I didn't think Monopoly had to go to the next level, but they did. There's timed events like massive multipliers for all your winnings and challenges like treasure hunts or money sprees that have fun new mini games, plus with tons of rewards to collect, like stickers for trading with friends and hilarious emojis that are perfect for gloating, there's always a reason to dip back in.
Yeah.
Man, they cracked it, you know?
They did.
So join the fun. Download Monopoly Go now free on the App Store and Google Play. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all sometimes have issues or things we need to talk about, get off our chest. I have that all the time, don't you, Sona?
I do.
Yeah, and we need people to talk to. And we carry around different stressors. We carry big stressors. We carry small stressors. I was raised in a culture where you're supposed to kind of bottle it up, and I've learned over time that that's not the best thing to do. If you do let things rattle around in there for a while without talking it out, it can affect your life very negatively. Well, therapy is a safe space where you can get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. BetterHelp's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. A lot of people have a barrier towards getting therapy because they think, well, I don't know, I've got to find the person, talk to them. What if it's not a good match? Then it's awkward. None of that. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and then you switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Conan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Conan.
do a little review the reviewers. This is where we'll go to Apple Podcasts and see how the reviews are coming in.
Always fills me with dread, but I accept the will of the people.
I know that you always say that this fills me with dread, and I always give you complimentary ones. So this time I've chosen one that's not as much.
Is that true?
No, but you'll see.
I just soiled myself.
Conan.
Aww.
5 stars. I used to watch your TV show when I was in college and always enjoyed your humor. Unfortunately, I had to stop watching you on TV because your face reminded me of a haunted Victorian doll with neon red hair that I saw during a bad trip. I continue to see his face in my dreams. Thanks to your search for friends, good luck, I'm again able to enjoy your wit now that I no longer have to look and see the doll's face. Thank you.
That's unbelievable. I mean, first of all, it's beautifully written, and obviously this is true. This is how he feels.
Yeah.
And I'm no fan of my face.
Don't.
I like your
I'm
face.
I'm serious.
I think you have a good-looking face.
I know.
Thank you. That's nice of you to say, and you don't need to do that, but I'm saying I applaud this person's honesty because they say that I do have a great wit. Thank you. And I think that's been recorded in history and written about by many great scholars.
Not many people.
What are we talking about? Was,
not many.
No, yeah. No, many New England Journal of Medicine, what? Lancet, many medical journals have weighed in on my wit. I am a great wit, but, and a, man, God, what a quick mind. But let's face it, it's all coming out of this face. That you're either down with this face or you are not. And that guy said a haunted Victorian doll.
Well, it's not that your face is bad. It's I can see, you know, with your hair.
It's not that your face is bad.
Yeah. No. Don't. That. I think you're a very handsome man. I think it's like with your hair and your complexion. Like sometimes you can, you know, it, there can be like funny caricatures of you or yes. Like, you know.
Yes, yes.
That are,
I'm an exaggerated figure. I'm someone when you see me, you've seen me. No one ever says, "Are you Conan O'Brien?"
Yes.
When you see this pumpkin coming down the street,
come on.
You know that you have just, you know, been in the presence of Conan O'Brien. If there's no like, "Are you this guy or are you that guy?" I never get that.
But isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's a good thing. And a haunted Victorian doll is not inherently unattractive.
Okay, well, this actually reminds me of something because I was invited to give a talk, and it was in England at a very prestigious university, and I was really excited. I decided I'll bring my kids and my wife with me, and we'll make it sort of a fun week. And we went to England, and I spoke, and it was at Oxford.
Ooh.
And it was kind of a cool deal. But while we were there, because of jet lag and everything, we couldn't sleep, so we turned on the TV, and there was this movie on called Brahms the Boy. Has anyone ever seen? And I think it's called, it's about this very attractive woman. An old couple says, "Can you look after, we're leaving, will you?" And she thinks she's going to look after a kid, and it's a little doll, and his name is Brahms.
Ew.
And it's this little doll, and she's like, whatever, but they're paying, and it's a nice place. And then, of course, the typical thing where you walk out of the room and then you come back and the doll was in a slightly different position.
No.
Do you know
pass.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, but you know what I want to say? People always want to say that that's really creepy.
Yeah.
And my thing is always, it's a fucking doll. Smash it.
Oh.
Smash it. Go over and pick up a poker and smash it.
Yeah, but she has to watch the doll. You can't just smash
yes,
the doll
you can.
You're supposed to watch.
Well, this is what I would have done. She, of course, had all those same thoughts. I would have thought, wait a minute, this doll, it's moving around, it's looking at me. Of course, there's the obligatory, like, I'm going to try on this thong, and then you turn around and Brahms is in the doorway.
Ugh.
Okay, you know what? That's when you smash Brahms into pieces and you feed him into wood chipper, and then you go and buy a kind of similar doll. And when the old people come back and go, "This doesn't look like Brahms," go, "Yeah, your medication's off. Thanks. Oh. I'm out of here."
I would bury it. I'd put it in a box.
No.
I would bury
nope,
it
nope.
until they came
Wait,
back.
Wait, Sona,
and
you
then,
were just saying you need to watch the doll. Like you're advocating for watching the doll like a good
it'll
babysitter.
It'll be safe in have a you, box in the ground.
Have you seen any horror movies ever?
Yes.
You think that you can bury this doll, Brahms, and be like, "Well, I'll be safe now and go to sleep."
No.
No.
Brahms.
Little tiny
magic,
plastic hands clawing their way
Annabelle.
Out of the soil.
I don't know, guys.
So anyway, I was obsessed with, we only got to watch part of it. We missed a big chunk of it. And we only got to watch part of it. And I didn't get to see how it ended because I had to go to bed because I had to give this thing the next day and the kids had to go to sleep. So I didn't get to see it. then everywhere on like Netflix or wherever is Brahms 2, okay? But I said, like, I don't want to watch Brahms 2. I want to watch the original Brahms because I never got to see it. Couldn't find it anywhere.
What?
And I mean anywhere. And I was going through every single site. I was going online. It was as if it never existed.
Oh, it moved.
Oh, my
it
God.
Moved. The movie
but then
moved.
I realized, exactly. But then I found out that it's not called Brahms the Boy. I think it's just called
The Boy.
The Boy.
Yeah.
Have you looked it up?
Yeah, I have.
And what's it say?
It's The Boy. It's from 2016, and it's available to stream on Fubo.
See? What happened?
Oh, why it's on Netflix, apparently.
Yeah, wait, I think it's on Netflix
did
now.
Did a guy named Brahms make it? Like, did he direct it or write it? Why did you think it was called Brahms?
Because Brahms is the name of the kid. The doll. And I think in England, they were calling it Brahms the Boy. And then for whatever reason, there's something mysterious about this movie because it's hard to pin down. I think it's called Different Things, Different Places. Like the doll itself. This movie's mysterious, but I'm obsessed now. I want to watch all of Brahms the Boy.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, and you know what? Lauren Cohan from Walking Dead is in it, who I love, and yes. She's terrific.
Yes.
So I think people should check this movie out.
Have you ever heard of a movie called Bad Ronald?
No.
It's from the 70s, and this family moves into a house to find that a young boy lives within the walls of the house, but not supernatural. He's just like living inside the walls and comes out at night to get food.
Ew.
Okay, but can I just say something? It doesn't sound like a horror movie. That's a squatter.
Yeah.
That's someone it. Who's just, that's just, all you have to do is call the police and say, this person's here illegally. What if the whole thing ends up in the courts? And the boy is saying, you know what? I've
sequel.
Actually been here for eminent domain. I would love it if that movie just got bogged down in legal, long legal meetings. And the boy's there eating a sandwich and he's covered in soot and spiders. But he's going like, nope. Actually, look at it again. Nope. I moved in March 3rd, 2006. Yeah, I know, but we didn't know. I know, but that's in the coin of the law. And then they're quoting Latin.
He's got good legal counsel.
He's got really good legal counsel.
Yeah.
And the legal counsel meets with him at the house in the walls. They're like, we're here to see the boy that lives in the walls. Oh, damn it.
And they
really?
Have to let him in.
They have
for
to
the
let
meeting.
Him in. Yeah. And then they crawl into the wall too. And you can just hear murmuring like, well, actually, no, we think we can get that. No, what we're going to do. No. We're going to get a summary judgment. And then you just hear the boy go, summary judgment. Hey, do you don't have any food with you, do you? We don't have any food. But anyway, we'll do it. We'll work on that. But
there
is the matter of, yes, we're working pro bono, but we'd like to see some kind of retainer because we're going to have to. Okay, no, I'm sure we can work that out. And then the boy and the lawyers come out and say, can we use your fax machine?
Wait, listen to this description. A made-for-TV movie about a creepy, nerdy boy named Ronald who gets himself in over his head when he kills a little girl in the neighborhood.
Wait, what?
He's a killer, the kid.
So he's
oh,
not
you
just
didn't
a
say that.
Yeah, he's murdered.
You buried the lead, literally.
Sorry, I couldn't remember.
You thought Bad Ronald was just Bad Ronald because he was hanging out in a wall.
Yeah.
He killed somebody. You're terrible.
That's a technicality. I'm glad
you
didn't.
What if you wrote for the old TV guy and you were constantly leaving out important information? Psycho, a woman goes looking for a good motel, has some difficulties.
Shower interrupted.
Yeah, shower interrupted. Oh, I guess the pressure wasn't good enough and she got out and took a bath instead. Yeah, I forgot to mention.
Okay.
Well, anyway, Brahms the Boy, check it out. And Boy in the Wall, what's that movie called?
Bad Ronald.
Conan, you wouldn't be good at writing horror movies.
You know what? When I write a horror movie, I always think it's funny if it devolves into legal squabblings. I always want like the zombie to come in, but then they're like, well, wait a minute. Did the zombie ask to come in? No. And then suddenly you see the zombie and the person who was the victim talking to a judge. And the judge is like, listen, you did not. You came in. You entered illegally. That was an illegal entrance. And the zombie has like its jaws kind of falling off. And he's like, well, it's just that I wanted to eat brains. I know you wanted to eat brains. You should wait until Mr. Anderson leaves the house.
I just wanted the brains now.
So, yeah, I know. But when you put your hand through his door and went, you actually entered the house illegally. So I find for the plaintiff. And then he's like, you have to pay for a new door. how much do you think the door was worth? And then the plaintiff is going to say, like, I think that I need $800 for that.
$800? It wasn't even a good door. My hand went right through it.
Not a good door. That is mahogany. That is African mahogany. That was a beautiful door.
There's no way that's fucking African mahogany. My hand went right through.
Bang, 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 bang.
$800. This is bullshit.
And then his jaw completely falls off, so he can't talk anymore. And the judge is like, we can't understand you, sir. Just pick up your jaw, reattach it, and then you can maybe make your case. Zombie movies interrupted that devolve into long legal squabbles. That's the genre I'm going to spearhead on my new network called Nobody Likes It.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sona Movsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.